Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Through my kaleidoscope, miracles flow. Melodies blossom and fragrances glow. Lightly they tumble, a jelly bean jumble of sight and sound, as color and cadence converge and combine. Perfume is fire, is music, is wine. From the inside of my miracle-idoscope, I can clearly hear what I'm touching and feel what I see. I can get high on the moon. Well, now, would you believe I can taste this very tune?
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and live online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. The lyricist and songwriter Marshall Bearer used to say that he put the fun back in dysfunctional. His musical career took him from cabaret to Broadway to the TV screen, and the breadth of his work is being celebrated now in a series of performances by the actress and singer B.J. Ward, who joins me on Soundcheck today, along with the man that the Chicago Sun-Times calls the Cabaret King, Michael Feinstein. Both of them joining me in our Soundcheck studios. Michael, B.J., thanks for being here.
Hello.
Pleasure to be here.
We also have pianist Jeff Harris, who will be accompanying you, B.J., at Feinstein's at the Regency from October 24th through, I guess it's through November 7th. There's lots to talk about there. But, Michael, I understand you actually introduced B.J. to the music of, or the lyrics of Marshall Bearer.
B.J. had met Marshall. I was a catalyst in later supplying her with some rather wonderful but obscure and arcane material that I thought she would enjoy. B.J. came up with the idea of putting together a show of Marshall's incredible lyrics, mm-hmm. and I was thrilled at the thought, and certainly what she has ended up creating, I think, is, to quote Marshall, beyond compare.
So now how did so you each knew Marshall separately, is that right?
Michael knew him better than anybody, I think. You've known him all through the years. I was sort of knew him peripherally in Los Angeles, and I had been invited to a couple of his parties, but Michael was the real kind of curator of Marshall's lyrics, and he's just kept everything of Marshall's, and they were really good friends.
Well, now, you, Michael, are known as sort of a champion, a lover of the American songbook, you know, the classic popular songs of the 30s, 40s, 50s. Was Marshall Bearer, was he part of that lineage?
Marshall was very much part of that lineage. Marshall collaborated with many extraordinary composers who were part of the golden age of American popular song. He wrote with Hoagy Carmichael. He wrote 80 songs with Duke Ellington. He wrote with Dana Suess, who wrote amazing popular songs in the 30s. He wrote with Vernon Duke, Michael Leonard, who wrote the score of The Yearling, David Shire, Michel Legrand. I mean, the list goes on and on.
And, of course, Mary Rogers in his most famous piece.
Yes, Once Upon a Mattress, which was written for Nancy Walker but ended up starring Carol Burnett and made her a star.
Right. But this is a man who wrote songs like If You Break Both Your Legs, Don't Come Running Back to Me, and What Good Is Happiness? You Can't Buy Money With It. So if he was, Michael, a part of this lineage, he also seems to have, been often a little eddy off the mainstream.
Oh, he was always pushing the envelope. Marshall was one of the most brilliant lyricists I knew, and he had fans ranging from Stephen Sondheim to pop recording stars, because he was unique in the way that he presented ideas. And he could write a beautifully crafted, wonderful love song, but his favorite thing was to write something edgy. And he wrote very dirty songs that are hysterical, but unfortunately you can't perform them in public.
Except for Midnight Show, perhaps.
Yes, or
house.
2 a.m.
Yeah, the 2 a.m. show. Yeah.
And what was that song that we were hearing at the top of this segment?
Kaleidoscope is a song about synesthesia, about how you can taste a color and feel a smell, that sort of thing, because Marshall lived very much in that world of mixing up the senses, and he loved that sort of confusion because that's the world that he lived in. I mean, I called him one day and I said, "What are you doing today?" He said, "Well, I just dropped some acid and I'm going to the market." And that was Marshall.
But he wasn't a kid. I mean, if he was dropping acid, he would have been at that point well into his, 60s?
Yes. Sometimes drugs do interesting things to people's lives. I mean, he certainly was ravaged physically from his excesses, but he also felt that it helped him to access a certain part of his creativity that he could not access in quite the same way without the chemicals. He once said, I know that when I take something, it will give me the song that I need. He said, but I have to pay for it. It'll take several days of payment for that gift of that song.
Yeah. He didn't drink alcohol and he didn't smoke cigarettes. But I think back in the 60s, Ram Dass and Timothy Leary and everybody, acid was looked at in a little different way. People were taking it with psychologists to try to blast open to some sort of spiritual level. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just, it became very recreational and people just liked having their minds blown and everything. But it wasn't a mean, hard drug like crack and things like that. It was a much more creative space at the time until people, you know, found out what it could do or not do to them later.
Right. Although it sounds, Michael, like from what you're saying, that Marshall did sort of have some sense that he was paying for whatever he got out of this. We're speaking with both Michael Feinstein and with B.J. Ward about the lyricist and songwriter Marshall Bearer. And B.J., it seems like putting a whole evening of this guy's songs together is going to take you across the spectrum. I mean, as Michael said before, the guy could write really lovely love songs and then these really kind of X-rated bawdy tunes as well.
That's what made me very interested in it, because there was just, it's never boring. I mean, he wrote about 4,000 songs, and it was very difficult to know what to leave out. There are beautiful songs, there are Noel Coward-ish songs, there are takeoff songs. He was wickedly funny. And I'm encouraged by the response of audiences. Usually people, I think, need to have some familiar piece of music where in the middle of your show they can go, oh, I love this. Oh, that was our song. These are totally new songs that nobody's heard, except maybe Michael recorded some of them years and years ago. But people are ready to take the ride and hear this. This, it's like opening up an undiscovered treasure trove up in your attic and finding, oh my gosh, look at these songs. To me it is.
Well, now I have to ask you, in the middle of your set, at that point where people are yearning for something familiar, do you pull out the Mighty Mouse theme song that he wrote?
Well, people always want to hear me sing Mighty Mouse no matter where I go and how many countries I've traveled to. I was thinking when I sang it at the Regency Monday, you know, how many times has this song been sung at the Regency? Probably never.
Yeah. What did
that's his novelty.
Yeah. And did Michael, did he think of that as a novelty number? Did he think, boy, I really hit the nail on the head with this tune?
He hated the Mighty Mouse song because he wrote it quickly. He wrote it on assignment. But he was head of A&R, Artists and Repertoire, at Golden Records for many years. So he wrote hundreds of children's songs very successfully, songs that that sold literally millions of copies. So he was able to appeal to the child's sensibility brilliantly. He wrote an incredible piece called Jack Be Nimble, which was recorded by Bing Crosby, that is just a great story record.
Hmm. So he wrote for the kids, and then he wrote decidedly late-night adult material as well. And B.J., the first song that you and Jeff Harris are going to do for us here in the studio is getting sort of closer to the latter end of things, isn't it?
Well, it's just sort of Marshall's philosophy.
Okay. You don't want to get into it any more than that?
No, I think the song is pretty self-explanatory.
Okay. It's called Billions of Beautiful Boys, and we will hear it sung by B.J. Ward with pianist Jeff Harris. It's a song from Marshall Bearer, and it's live on Soundcheck.
There are billions of beautiful boys in the world, but all I want is two. I could float through the air with the greatest of ease, with just one perfect partner on each of my knees. Picture you and you upon a knee apiece, enjoying tea for three, and three on the aisle, and three cigarettes in the dark. In our elegant triplex on Third Avenue, floating high above Trinity Park, we've a view of the Triborough Bridge, triple sec in the fridge, and a loo that is truly divine. Well, it's rub-a-dub-dub in a three-cornered tub with the towels marked his and mine. I'd adore to go soaring too high in the sky in a trimotor plane with a guy and a guy. But I ask for no more than to gaze into four eyes of blue in a cottage for three. Only four eyes of blue in a one-bedroom cottage for three with you two. That's for me.
That's B.J. Ward singing with pianist Jeff Harris, a song by Marshall Bearer. We're speaking with both B.J. Ward and with Michael Feinstein, and in fact, B.J. is performing at Feinstein's at the Regency, beginning October 24th and going through November 7th. Information's on our website, the soundcheck page at wnyc.org.
Three consecutive Mondays.
They're Mondays, okay.
Mondays at 8:30. And it's a special $25 cover charge, which is very attractive, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the world of cabaret, that's cheap.
Now, it is, yeah. Yes, now, it is.
Michael, to hear BJ sing that song is one thing. Would Marshall have written this song for himself to sing?
Marshall wrote some things for himself, some things with particular personalities in mind. He was brilliant at writing for character. For example, when he wrote Once Upon a Mattress, as soon as Carol Burnett got the show, he rewrote some of the songs tailored to her talents. He was the greatest writer of special material, and he knew exactly how to bring out the best of the persona of any particular performer.
Now, for someone who wrote, you know, a Mighty Mouse, you know, TV theme song and other children's material, wrote that tune, which is bawdy but not X-rated, and then went beyond that to things that really are X-rated, can he be said to have had a consistent style across all of that?
I think that Marshall was certainly in many ways a lyrical chameleon, but the hallmark of his writing is the unexpected twists that they take and the brilliant use of alliteration in a way that is never cloying or for the sake of being clever, but always for the service of expressing an idea or a thought. Mm-hmm. He had gotten to the point in his writing where he could be very economical and very expressive in a small sentence.
Right. So Billions of Beautiful Boys, the alliterative title of the song that B.J. Ward just sang for us. And the show, Once Upon a Mattress, that's 1959. I'm assuming that must have been his biggest, you know, success.
By far his biggest success. And I asked him to autograph my score of Once Upon a Mattress. And he wrote, it's Marshall Bearer who wrote Once Upon a Mattress several times.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And as we do, we'll hear some of B.J. Ward's recording of a medley from Once Upon a Mattress. We're speaking with B.J. Ward and Michael Feinstein. And a little bit later on in the program, we'll be talking about favorite restaurants that also are great places to hear music. And we'll be taking your calls on that topic. That's all coming up on Soundcheck.
Alas, and he pined, alas. But alas, the prince couldn't find a lass who would suit his mother's pride. Normandy. Though I may appear
though
a square,
I may appear
I have
a square, I have been around.
And I don't mean here
and I don't
there.
Mean here
I really
and there.
Mean
I really mean around.
If around they say
if
I've
around
played,
they say
roundly
I've
I'll contend.
Roundly I'll contend.
Were the rounds I have made
were
to
the
be
rounds
led,
I have made
end to end they'd extend.
To end they'd extend round the bend.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. My guests include Michael Feinstein and the actress and singer B.J. Ward. We're talking about the music of lyricist Marshall Bearer. And in the background, B.J., we're hearing this duet that you recorded with the lyricist and songwriter Adam Gettle, the son of Mary Rogers, with whom Marshall wrote Once Upon a Mattress.
That's right. And Marshall used to always call Mary Dorothy's daughter.
Uh-huh.
Just to be a little, yeah.
Or Richard's
always Dorothy's daughter.
No, it was Dorothy.
Dorothy's daughter.
Okay.
And Adam was about 14 when he wrote that song. And he used to hang out with Marshall. And Marshall was, children loved Marshall because he was sort of a Peter Pan type guy. And he was famous for saying, "Now don't tell your mother." You know, and even his aunt Marcy told me that when her two boys were young, she said, "I'm going to leave them with Marshall for just a couple hours." Marshall said, "I've got it covered. Don't worry. Don't do anything dangerous. No, no, no." Well, years later, the boys told him, they were 7 and 9 at the time, Marshall had rented a helicopter without any sides, taking the boys flying over Miami Beach because it was their rite of passage. He wanted them to have fun. So Adam had written the song.
So he turned to him and said, "Now you're a man because you've flown over Miami in an open door helicopter."
"Don't tell your mother" was always his big mantra. "Don't tell your mother."
Now, Adam's appearing. What date is Adam going to be appearing with you?
The 31st on Halloween.
Oh, okay.
He'll be singing with me.
Michael, will you be appearing with BJ?
Yes, next Monday I'll be appearing. And doing a duet. And then David Hyde Pierce will be appearing on the final Monday, which is that November?
November 7th.
Yeah.
Wow.
And another special guest on the 31st that I won't announce yet, but it'll be a surprise to everybody there. But
so
can you tell us the initials?
I think with David Hyde Pierce and Michael here and Adam Gettle, you got a pretty strong lineup there.
I'm pretty
Do
excited.
Do people all know each other? I mean, it just seems like everybody in the cabaret world knows everybody else. You've all worked together and, you're all...
But I've known Michael, who's worked with my husband, Gordon Hunt, on a lot of the Taper Salon series, with different lyricists every year. And David Hyde Pierce, I did Frasier. I was a guest on Frasier, and I played some big snooty opera lady on the thing. And when I met him at the table read-through, he said, "Oh, I know stand-up opera. I have your album." Because he's a big opera buff.
Uh-huh.
So it's a kind of a very small island, and you never know quite how anybody knows anybody. But Michael is very good friends with David Hyde.
Well, David's my next-door neighbor in Los Angeles, so.
Okay. And now you mentioned opera, BJ. You did study opera.
I did.
You've sung opera. Mm-hmm. You've also been the voice of various pretty well-known cartoon characters. So just as Marshall had a pretty broad spectrum, you have a pretty broad vocal spectrum that you work within.
I think maybe that's what attracts me so much to Marshall and to his material. The offbeat quality of it, the improv quality of it, the beauty of it, the difficulty of some of it, the use of language, the brilliant use of language, the craziness of it.
The craziness.
Yeah.
Marshall, the thing about Marshall is that he knew the lyricist's craft extremely well, and he loved to push the boundaries of it. For example, there was a song that Ira Gershwin and Kurt Weill wrote called A Rhyme for Angela. And the whole idea of the song is that the singer cannot find a rhyme for Angela. "I can find a rhyme for Lucy. For instance, her kiss is juicy, but I must confess that I'm lost more or less with Angela. Angela, what a joy to rhyme Amanda. Each movement is pure propaganda. But rhyming is lame when you get a name like Angela." And it goes on and on, I can't find a rhyme for Angela. Marshall said, play that melody again. So I played it for him, and he sang, "I have found a rhyme for Angela. She's big and round and glandula."
Oh.
You gotta love that guy. You gotta love him.
Just off the cuff.
Yeah. Up until the last word, I was going to ask you whether he represented a sort of lost world of Broadway, but I don't think anybody from I can't think of too many like 1950s era, Hammerstein, Kern, Rogers type shows that would use the word glandular.
Glandula. No, I mean, he would go for it. One day he'd leave things on my answering machine. Like once he called and just said, "Did I write this because I'm Hammerstein? Or am I Hammerstein because I wrote this?" Click. He would just leave all these little things and just go on with his day.
So Marshall Bearer, in addition to being this obviously very witty guy, he ran a bunch of these kind of musical salons at his home in Venice, California, right?
I wouldn't say
he ran them.
It sort of happened. He would have these...
They're happenings.
Yeah, he'd have people over Sunday, sometimes Saturdays, and he would prepare for them, but they were always so wild, and some of them are a dim memory and some are not, mm-hmm. but they were extraordinary because of the musical creativity that occurred at them, and you never knew who you were going to see there because everybody really loved being there, except for a few people who would walk in and walk out immediately.
Mm-hmm. He left his door open, too, and street people would come in.
Oh, yeah. There were people. He'd always have some strange person living with him, someone else you'd run from. You'd think they were going to murder you, but he'd go, no, no, he's helping me out. Seriously.
So Maud Maggart, who was here just a week or two ago, was an alumna of these music salons, as was her sister, apparently, Fiona Apple, the pop singer.
Yes.
Well, her father is Brandon Maggart, and Marshall used to crash at their house all the time. And he would try to put Marshall in an upstairs bedroom, and Marshall preferred the living room because he could watch TV all night long. And so anybody that had to come through the house had to go through Marshall in the living room. And, of course, he could just, you know, use the refrigerator. And so they grew up sort of with Marshall there. And he said Marshall would fly back and forth, and he wouldn't – from coast to coast. He wouldn't have any luggage. He would go right to a thrift store in Venice, bring home a paper bag full of stuff, dump it on the kitchen floor, and say proudly to Brandon, $17! And he'd put on some, you know, Calvin Klein pants, maybe an old Armani jacket, and a fedora and flip-flops. And Brandon said he would go out to a Disney meeting like this. And at the front, he kind of looked okay. In the back, there'd be gaffer's tape, and there'd be clothespins, and Marshall would be flip-flopping out the door in his outfit. He's so proud.
We're reminiscing about Marshall Bearer, the lyricist and songwriter with Michael Feinstein and B.J. Ward. Pianist Jeff Harris is dutifully at the keyboard. B.J., you want to do another song for us?
Sure.
From Marshall's songbook? What's this one?
This is Beyond Compare, and maybe Michael can tell you when he wrote this, but Michael recorded this, I think one of the first people to record this.
Yes, Marshall wrote this sometime in the 70s, I think it was the early 70s, with music by David Ross, who was an extraordinarily talented composer, and this was always my favorite ballad by Marshall, and he was very proud of this song.
All right, so
I think he would have loved the way that BJ sings it, truly.
Okay. All right, let's hear BJ. BJ Ward with pianist Jeff Harris and another live performance on Soundcheck.
How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 million. This could take me days and days and days. Shall I, my love, compare thee to Bob O'Rum or Summer's Day, Handel, Corral or Malibu, Rubens, Ravel, Mel Torme? Is there a better metaphor for how I melt beholding you? Or shall the glow I so adore only be felt unfolding you? Racking my brain for fitting praise, seeking in vain the perfect phrase, pouring through piles of poems and plays, haunting the aisles at Doubledays. I might convey the state I'm in if I could play the mandolin. Since I cannot, I'll just declare you are beyond compare and leave it right there. And leave it right there.
That's B.J. Ward singing live in our studio with Jeff Harris at our piano, and another song from lyricist Marshall Bearer. That one, Michael Feinstein, you said David Ross wrote the music for,
yes,
for that? Okay. Now, B.J. will be performing a whole program of Marshall Bearer's lyrics at Feinstein's at the Regency the next three Mondays, October 24th. And, Michael, you'll be helping out a bit then?
Just a bit.
Just a bit. October 31st, Adam Gettle, B.J., will be joining you then. And November 7th, when David Hyde Pierce joins the festivities.
A cavalcade of stars.
Indeed. 8:30 each evening. Details on our website, the soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Michael, we're going to be talking in just a few minutes with our audience, in fact, about great places in the city to eat music. Talk about synesthesia.
Talk about synesthesia,
music,
yes.
Listen,
yeah. Back
and listen to food.
That sounds good. I love to listen to food.
But, I mean, you know, eating and listening together, that's the experience at Feinstein's at the Regency, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The great thing about having Feinstein's at the Regency Hotel is that it's a five-star hotel with a great chef. And people always talk about the high cost of cabaret, but when you come to a place like Feinstein's or the Algonquin, Carlisle, you get a great show and you also get a wonderful meal. And it's a wonderful experience to be there because it's something that is disappearing, really. I mean, there are certainly many kinds of music that one can experience in the city, but for this kind of music, it's become rarefied, and it used to be something that was so very prevalent in the city.
Right. Well, as you say, there are many other types of music to be heard in many other types of eateries here in the city,
yeah.
And we'll be checking in with some of you folks, our Soundcheck audience, about where you go to hear music and to eat a meal, so stay with us for that. In the meantime, B.J. Ward and Michael Feinstein, a real pleasure to have the two of you here. Good luck with the run of shows
thank
next three Mondays.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck.
We can start the machine, and from here in the gloom as we gaze at the screen, we can step into yesterday still. We can step into yesterday still.
Oh, wasn't it romantic? Our world of make-believe. My knight upon his charger.
And now it's time for your emails. We spoke yesterday with journalist Tim Riley about the Bob Dylan No Direction Home CD set. In the course of talking about all the alternate versions of Dylan songs available, Stephen wrote in to say, "Recordings, by definition, sound the same every time they're heard. Every small nuance of the known performance is ingrained in the listener's memory. The different version of the sound jolts those cobwebbed brains and gives us something of the experience of our primitive ancestors prior to the 20th century, when every performance was unique. Dylan has played with that aspect of sound in his live performances repeatedly, devotedly, and obsessively." In response to our Wednesday conversation on the tango with Yale art historian Robert Farris Thompson, Dave writes, "Your guest today is so enthusiastic, he keeps saying, 'Oh, can you hear that part of tango music, the drums, etc.?' No, I as a listener cannot hear it because he won't shut up. It's really annoying." But another listener named Greg enjoyed Professor Thompson's show-and-tell approach. He writes, "I just listened to the podcast of Forever Tango. Not only was the music fun to listen to, but the interviewee was an exceedingly interesting and articulate character. I have long been a fan of Astor Piazzolla, but now I find there are all sorts of other musicians I have to check out." Finally, Christine writes, "Being an Argentine expatriate and married to a musician, it filled my heart with memories, deep nostalgia, and great pride." Thanks, Christine. Brooke writes to us about our interview with the band Hem, which we characterized as countrypolitan. She says, "Hem is not countrypolitan. They are more like old-fashioned folky Americana, which is another thing entirely. Visit countrypolitan.com and you'll see that they just don't belong in the room. I live in Tennessee, so I know what I'm talking about." We also received several responses to our conversation Tuesday about the medical condition known as amusia, meaning the inability to recognize musical tones and sometimes referred to as tone deafness. In our conversation, we played an audio sample of a test administered to people to determine if they have amusia. Gil, a guitarist, writes, "I was casually listening the other day, and when the sound clips were played, the first two guitar clips seemed ridiculously different, the equivalent of holding up big flashing signs. With the synths, though, I didn't hear anything different. Should I report to a clinic somewhere for a musical hearing test? Maybe take up hockey instead?" For the record, each of the clips we played were different, but don't start lacing up those skates just yet. Researchers are still a long ways from understanding this condition, but this is kind of catchy, don't you think? Finally, Jerry from Queens strikes again, this time via email. As some of you may know, my brother Jerry often calls in and often gets confused. This time Jerry writes, "Good show yesterday with the Imitators of Sidewalk. However, I like Sidewalk better." Well, that's nice, Jer, but the band's name is Pavement. The jazz musicians on the CD Golden Sound were doing inventive arrangements of the music of Pavement, not Sidewalk. Well, if you have comments, however misguided, story ideas, or questions to share, we'd like to hear from you. Send us your thoughts at soundcheck@wnyc.org and tell us your first name and where you're writing from. This time.